Welcome to the Wretched Hive Podcast.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Mos Eisley Spaceport.
What are you talking about?
You will never find.
Never find the more wretched hive.
Scum and villainy.
This is ridiculous.
We must be cautious.
What? Actually, we're just a bunch of guys talking about Star Wars and other stuff.
I'm looking forward to having some real talk with some real folks.
That's folks. Good news.
I like the sound of that.
Well, there is certainly no shortage of Star Wars news that we can talk about, and we are so glad that you're joining us and listening into episode 3 of the Wretched Hive podcast.
Yeah!
For February...
Revenge of the Hive.
Friday, February 5th, 2016. My name is Steve Baldwin, and wow, do we have a great show lined up for you today. The team is back, and we're fired up and ready to go.
Woo!
So let me introduce the team. As always, we have my good friend and yours, Greg Lent.
Hi, Steve. It's so very nice to be back. I promise this week I'm going to be nice. I listened to the last episode, and I was a little rude. I apologize to anybody who was offended out there. And this week, it's a whole new me. Completely new me.
Just take it easy
on
Joe Walsh. I mean, don't dig into any of the other Eagles. Poor
I don't
man.
Think anybody
what
has died.
Do to you?
Well,
what are you saying about Joe Walsh? Is he next?
I have no beef with any of the other members of the Eagles except for maybe Don Henley.
Although I have heard you have a beef with a certain movie that we all love, and I think we're going to talk about that a little bit later tonight.
Don't spoil the lead.
All right.
I don't bury the lead.
All right. Bury the lead. Damn
all right.
It.
We also have another founding member of this podcast, proud member of the A-Team, lifelong Star Wars fan, Scott Ivansky.
Woo! Proud to be here. Thank you again, gentlemen. I will keep it somewhat negative free, but I might dive into some negativity a little bit, just a little bit.
Well, we could be negative about the movie in question. I will contend that I still love that movie, and it's still a great movie, even though it sucks. But we'll get to that.
Even though it sucks.
And you know that voice, actually representing the millennial generation.
The youngins.
In fact, you know what? You are captain of the Millennial Falcon. How about
the Millennial
that?
Falcon. I'll take it.
How about that? Nico Rodriguez.
Woo! That's me.
And last, but certainly not least, you know him, you love him. Dave, do not call me Harry Potter.
It's good to be back, Steve. I'm not in my car this time, so hopefully that will increase the production value of this podcast by at least a factor of 10.
So it'll bring us up to like a D-minus range.
Dude, only the best for you, my friend. Only the best.
Well, it's good to have you all back. So before we get into the news, I wanted to do a couple of shout-outs because we posted these shows online. We have a Facebook page. We made some announcements on Facebook. Yes. We are on iTunes, believe it or not.
And I have to say, when I saw that, I was like, oh my God, we're on iTunes. That's so cool. And my second thought was, wow, they really let anybody on here now.
No doubt about it. So we got a couple of fans, guys, unbelievably.
Woo-hoo! And they're not ceiling fans. They're real people.
They're not ceiling fans. They're actual people. And by the way, facebook.com/wretchedhivepodcast if you want to check it out.
If you wanted to send an email, Steve, where would you send an email? Because I have burning questions. Where would I send that email?
You know, it's funny you mentioned
that. Aren't we plugging
that,
all this at like the very end?
I think we'll plug it at the end, but since you asked, it's wretchedhive.
You're not the boss of me.
@yahoo.com. But I got a couple of really nice messages, and I wanted to do a couple of shout-outs. I have a Facebook friend. You know how these things are. You've got friends that are your real life friends that you actually see and do stuff with. And then you've got Facebook friends that are acquaintances from long ago, maybe they haven't seen in years. And then you might even have Facebook friends that you don't really know who they are, but you're friends with them for some reason. And
who are you?
Well, it's true. I am friends with a very, very nice lady named Yvonne Delgado Santos. And we became Facebook friends because I accidentally friended her. And then she...
And she did not call the police. Amazing.
Right? I know. And I immediately messaged her when she accepted my friend request. And I said, I'm sorry, I don't know you. I'm not a weirdo. I just did that by accident. And
wait, are you serious?
Yes, I swear to you. And she was very, very nice and said, well, you never know. Maybe it was just meant to be. Who knows? And we went our separate ways. And so when I posted the podcast this past week on Facebook, she commented on it. She says, this is fabulous. I have to share with all my Star Wars family. So I wanted to give a shout out to Yvonne. Thank you for that nice comment.
Thank you, Yvonne.
That is very, very sweet. And we appreciate you listening.
That's our number one fan.
And we'll try not to offend her too much.
Guaranteed fail, but that's okay. The other one I wanted to mention is a friend of mine who lives in Atlanta. We haven't seen each other in over a decade. I was actually the best man in his wedding 15 or so years ago, Brian Calderon. After listening to the podcast, he messaged me over Facebook and said, I just listened to two pretty good podcasts at work. You guys are doing a good job. Keep it up. I'll be listening to more in the future, I hope. So how about that?
My God, those are some kind words that one day we hope to deserve. Thank you very much.
All right. So with that, let's get into our topics this week. Guys, I think that we might actually have a third listener, and his name might be James Cameron.
Yeah.
It just took a step up. What's going on here? Yeah.
Who's your daddy, James Cameron?
James Cameron. Well, it was announced. Actually, I don't know if Cameron announced it, but it was announced and reported by TheWrap.com. Shortly after our podcast went live, actually. We should take full credit for everything we don't
absolutely
deserve, right?
Damn right we
Avatar
should.
2 will not compete against Star Wars Episode 8. Indeed, it has been delayed. Will not be ready for Christmas. There's no date on when the movie will be released. The only details we have is that it is delayed.
Ida, you know what, Blue Cats.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, we talked about this quite a bit on our last show, that putting those two movies up against one another was perplexing. And I think Dave had some good thoughts on that. In particular, I remember Dave saying something like it was almost certain death for both films because there just wasn't enough movie screens. And then the week after we had that conversation, they pushed Avatar 2 back. So I don't know. I don't know, guys.
Go ahead, Dave.
Oh, I was going to say, I saw some reporting on that, Steve. And what I think happened is that there were a lot of rumors floating around, apparently, at high levels that Avatar 2 was not going to hit its stated release date. That it sounds like it's a water world, not the movie, but a world made of water based movie, and is hitting a lot of production delays because of it. And that Fox reacted to it and shifted the movie, Disney reacted to it, shifting Star Wars around because they knew Fox was not going to hit that release date, and they wanted to snap it up before anybody else could grab it. And we basically just saw a game of poker where Fox completely folded.
Wow.
You know, I will go out and I will say that James Cameron obviously not an idiot. No, I said this is the nice episode. Come on.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That was James so Cameron. Last week that he was rude. Okay, this is this week.
2 weeks ago. I've grown so much in 2 weeks. So much.
2 weeks ago. Yes.
But no, James Cameron, you know, he's not an idiot. And he's always taken a long time with his movies. He took, you know, how long did he take with Titanic? How long did he take with the first Avatar? And part of the first Avatar was, yeah, waiting for the 3D to catch up. But even still, I mean, that movie was an in-development thing forever, you know? And both of those movies were written off as disasters, pre-releases. And both of them critically acclaimed and commercially acclaimed. So
absolutely.
He knows what he's doing. You know, the movie's going to be on his schedule. I honestly don't think he's afraid of Star Wars. I don't think it would affect his decision. Stars. I think he's more concerned about the quality of the movie. That's just the kind of guy James Cameron is.
I had a snarky response to that. I was going to say something to the effect that what James Cameron had pre-production issues that just goes hand in hand. But the guy likes to go big, basically. And I was actually having this discussion with my son and talking about how each movie he's done since Terminator has just one up the next one, the next one, and the next one. And I just foresee any production issues whatsoever. Just him just saying, you know what, let's push it back 6 months. Let's push it back a year. I believe you're right, Greg. Something about Titanic was the same way. And just because he pushed the production back and the release date of the film to, my goodness, just what was that, December 97? Was that December 97?
You are correct, sir.
Yeah, around that time,
impressive. You
know, so just because he made those decisions and pushed that back, it had a lot of people giving that movie a bad review before they even, you know, knew anything about it. So just based off of production issues and decisions. So I don't think there's that much of a conflict between the two and who's going to get the most box office and the money out of it. They're both going to score a ton of cash. So,
all right. So I guess we didn't actually influence the decision then. Is that what you're telling me?
No, we called James.
We people, totally did.
People totally did. It was all good.
All right.
Scott, I was holding him down. Scott was holding a little Avatar cat right over his head. He's going, you're going to stop this movie there, MF-er.
Avatar cat. That's, oh my god!
What the hell are those things called? The Navi?
Navi.
Navi. Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot the apostrophe.
It's not Leviosa. It's Leviosa.
Oh.
My favorite part of Avatar is the very precious gem or raw stone?
Unobtainium.
Unobtainium.
Unobtainium, but they're mining it. They're obtaining it. But it's unobtaining.
Look, I love Cameron's movies, but a dialogue writing is not his forte. I'm sorry.
You know, there's another director that has come under fire for that, actually.
I wonder who that is.
And before we hit that, though, I just got to say, James Cameron, where is my True Lies special edition Blu-ray? It's the only movie of yours that doesn't have a special edition out. Come on, man.
Dave, I'm high-fiving you right through Skype right now, man. I agree. I love that movie.
That is the best James Bond movie that came out in 15 years.
if that thing is released on Blu-ray next week, I'm calling it. We are influencing James Cameron.
I think we are.
That's it.
He's afraid of the wretched hive.
Well, in other semi-related Avatar news, The Force Awakens continues to make money, as you guys are well aware. And creeping up on the list of the largest grossing movies worldwide. Certainly, we reported last time that, you know, this movie holds the all-time U.S. box office and is still number three in worldwide, $1.984 billion, still far behind Avatar at $2.7 billion.
But
creeping up slowly on Titanic.
There you go.
Yeah, thank you. Yes. Yeah, still a ways to go. Titanic at 2.186 billion, but getting closer to surpassing that $2 billion mark.
And I believe it's almost past 900 million domestic as well. Is that correct?
You know, I did not look that up, so I do not know.
That is correct. It's total, according to Box Office Mojo, at least through yesterday, is $896.5 million.
Million in 46 days. That's ridiculous.
Incredible. Has anyone been to the theater in the last week? Is it still playing in, you know, like multiple theaters?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I looked up showtimes for last Friday, but did not go.
Okay.
There was the potential I was going to go on Friday, but it didn't happen. That plan fell through.
I was looking up trying to get tickets for the Deadpool release, and it was still playing the day before that. So,
whoa.
It's still playing in 2 weeks, a week from now.
So chances are, by the time this movie... I mean, what do you think the chances are that this movie, The Force Awakens, is going to pass up Titanic? And do you think it's just a mathematical certainty?
Yeah, it's still playing worldwide. I mean, pretty much, I think, in every place on the globe. So
everywhere.
Yeah, I personally think it'll pass Titanic. I think it'll get there. I mean, it's going to take some time in the theater, but I think it'll get there. Mm-hmm. For worldwide box office, yeah. The problem is, like you Nico touched on there, there's a shit ton of movies that are in the hopper just ready to come out right now, starting with Deadpool.
That looks like a lot of fun.
Deadpool. I think Deadpool is going to be, especially the targeted demographic, is going to really finally start to dig in. I know a lot of people will say The Revenant took away a lot of that that targeted audience, but it's still showing signs. I mean, it's pulling in $12 to $14 million on the weekend. The last weekend, I believe, was close around. Was it 12 million?
I don't know the number, but if I heard right, it was the number three movie for the weekend.
Right. Yeah. And all the new releases were below it on the list. So it's the percentage of drop off from the previous week was unbelievably low. It was around 25%, which is a really small number for this being in release this long. So it's got some amazing legs right now.
It's got legs. That's exactly what I was thinking. Nice old timey Hollywood reference there.
Now, Scott, you messaging earlier this week, you mentioned something about the Blu-ray release was announced.
Disney... I might have to go back on this, Steve. I'm sorry about that.
I was going to say, is this legit that they're really releasing the Blu-ray this early?
Well, let me throw this out there. When I sent the message off to Steve, they had an April 5th was the date.
Yep.
And that was all over the web. What I saw after I texted you or sent the message out was... Amazon was the one who leaked that release date, and they had to pull the release date. Ooh. So there must be some sort of conflict going on there. It seemed a little early to me as well, but I saw the information float on multiple sites, so I'm like, I have to send it out to you guys.
You know, the internet is another podcast I listen to refers to the internet echo chamber, right? So, you know, somebody puts some news out there, has no reliable sources. It just gets out there, and then, you know, 10 other sites report on that false report, and pretty soon you have this glut of incorrect information. It drives me crazy. And even just like researching, you know, our stories for the show, there's a lot of Star Wars news out there that does not have confirmed sources, that quotes an unnamed source at Disney or at XYZ Studio, and, you know, it's really hard to trace it back to the actual source to see if it's legitimate. It drives me nuts.
Yeah, it's a lot of sites quoting other sites quoting other sites. I mean, it's not anywhere near researched. I guess, like, confirmed sources that you can actually verify that this is going to happen. Is somebody taking a dump right now?
I'm hearing some weird noises coming out.
There's a good possibility that Nico is torquing a moonfish, right?
I am. I'm not. I'm sorry. Rough day at work, and I'm stretching out my back.
Got it.
Just kind of.
That's
stretching.
What I say all the time.
Torquing a moonfish is so fantastic, though. That's awesome.
Thank you.
We ought to pick up a listener for that. That's all I'm saying. That was great.
You know,
welcome to episode 4 of our podcast, now called Torquing the Moonfish.
It's not too late. I mean, this is the first official Wretched Hive. We could do Torquing the Moonfish podcast. It would actually be fairly descriptive of the content so far. All right, so there's one last bit of The Force Awakens news. I was really tickled by my son today, who sent me a link to the YouTube video for the preview of Star Wars The Force Awakens. That's a good one.
Use the fork.
That's the food podcast. The Force Awakens Lego game trailer. Have you guys seen it yet?
No.
It looks so freaking cute.
Oh,
it's adorable. No, if you haven't seen it yet, basically, it's the first trailer from the Force Awakens movie that we ever got, redone completely with the Lego universe like animation, but every scene is just slightly off in an adorable, quirky way that only makes sense for Lego.
Ah, that's kind of how I felt about Kylo Ren in the first place. As one adorable little bastard.
Well,
so
you're
with his melted Vader helmet.
We don't know if Han and Leia were married. I can call him that.
Now, Nico nailed it. I mean, it's exactly what this trailer is, and I was gonna play it, but it really the audio isn't great. It's a very visual trailer. You need to see, for instance, the Snoke voice comes on, and you know, there's been an awakening. Have you felt it? And Finn pops up. You hear an alarm clock, and he's looking at the alarm clock. And he throws it over his shoulder. It's just, you know, silly Lego comedy, and it's just so good. The people at Lego, whoever makes those videos. And the animated Lego shorts and stuff during the games and all the trailers they do for the Lego games, they're just so good. They're
so
funny.
I'll put this out there for credit. TT Games, I believe in London, makes the Lego games, so we've got to give them some props and some credit. They have great humor when they write those games. So
yeah.
And you can tell they're done by fans, too, because they get the little subtleties of the movies that make Star Wars Star Wars and, you know, turn it upside down and make fun of it. It's pretty good.
Hey Steve, will we provide a link?
Yes, I can. Okay. I can provide a link to that. It's in the show notes, and I can put it on Facebook for folks.
Excellent,
Steve. I actually have. I'm not going to call it breaking news, but I just found a link to a story that posted at about 7 p.m. PST that ties in the last two things we talked about, which is internet
breaking
echo chamber.
News.
Yeah, internet echo chamber and Lego, but. It's a story that basically says that Germany's Nuremberg Toy Fair, a representative from Lego, shared the following promo art for upcoming Star Wars sets, which included Boba Fett's ship, Slave One, under the Rogue One heading.
What?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
So
we're getting Star Wars leaks from the Lego company?
From right, yeah. I mean, that, there are legitimate things that have leaked out through the toys. The first news that C-3PO would have a red arm in the movie was when a C-3PO prototype was seen and shown, and everybody assumed it was a production error, and then it turned out, no, that was deliberate. 3PO has a red arm in the movie.
You're lying. Nobody recognized him with that red arm. Nobody did.
Can we pause for a second?
If he hadn't said anything, I wouldn't have known it was him.
Yeah. Have we touched on that yet in either of the other episodes we've recorded? Like, why does 3PO have a red arm? What purpose does that serve? And it comes up and he's like, oh, yeah, you probably don't recognize me. But then that's it. Like, that serves no purpose.
Fisting gone wrong?
I gotta say, I was so annoyed by 3PO in that movie. Yeah. I was so annoyed by the dialogue. I think is the costume looked horrible. I didn't like the red arm. I just was, you know, I was so annoyed. I walked out of there thinking, God, that was a great movie. I hate C-3PO. And I hate to say that, but it was really annoying to me. But anyway.
Well, you know, they played up his role to perfection in the first one and the second one. I'll say so. New Hope and Empire, C-3PO is a really good character. But since then, he's served no purpose for the series at all. None.
He absolutely tells great stories, though, doesn't he?
No, he doesn't. Absolutely not. He admits as much in the New Hope. I'm terrible at telling stories. I'm not much of a storyteller.
But which was brilliant for putting him as the storyteller in Return of the Jedi.
With sound effects.
Oh,
exactly.
I'm pretty sure that R2 is playing those sound effects.
R2 is the boombox to his.
He's the beatbox.
R2 is the Jan Master Jay to his Fresh Prince, is what you're saying.
The DJ. Whoa, you got some cross pop culture going on there, my friend.
I want to back up. I want to touch on what Dave said here. Mm-hmm. So, possible Boba Fett Slave One appearance, Rogue One. I think it's bloody likely. Rogue One. We have not seen one trailer at all. We haven't seen a hint of footage yet, and we're less than a year away. When did the episode one trailer, the first teaser, when did that premiere? That was more than a year out, wasn't it?
It was April. April was, I believe, the first trailer.
As a matter of fact, no, it was not. It was no. Thanksgiving time. It was Thanksgiving time.
Was it really?
The year before. Yeah. Yes, it was. So, who's going to be watching the Super Bowl this weekend? I have nothing to base this on. This is total conjecture on my part. But we're less than a year away without seeing any footage yet, and the Super Bowl is coming up. What do you think the chances?
That may be total conjecture, Greg, but when it comes true, the Wretched Hive can claim credit.
That's right.
Yes!
For daring Fox.
I like that.
You've heard it here, folks.
Yes!
You've heard it here first.
And yes, Kathleen Kennedy.
I also brought that reference up, Greg, for you. No one has ever said that. You get practical sexual satisfaction from talking about Rogue One at this point.
Hey, I just want to point out that I like that we're daring movie studios to do stuff. That's great.
We dare you to show us footage of the movie that we cannot wait to see.
We dare you.
I also like that it's the Nuremberg Toy Fair. It's the city where they tried Nazi war criminals, right? And we're talking about toys? Strange.
That's what Nuremberg's known for. Yeah. War crimes and toys.
And toys, Okay. Yeah. All right.
Come for the toys, stay for the war crimes.
Super Bowl trailer release. You heard it here first, folks.
Yeah.
I have not heard anything about that at all, by the way. There's no internet echo chamber going on here. The echo chamber is entirely in my own head.
Well, the beauty of that is if it doesn't happen, we can just forget about it and move on. Mm-hmm. If it happens, you know.
I will tell you right now.
We're heroes.
I will tell you all right now, I will be disappointed if it doesn't happen.
It makes perfect logical sense, though. I mean, it's the absolute best bang for your buck marketing platform. That's the trend in marketing on Super Bowl the last couple of years. I honestly think the movie commercials are by far the best ones to watch. And they did actually put out a cast photo a couple of weeks ago. So you might even say they were kind of priming the pump a little bit, if Greg's theory is correct.
Priming the pump now? This is getting a little blue.
Prime the pump, Kathleen Kennedy.
I can't wait to see. I'm hoping that Rogue One really lights a fire for these anthology series of pictures, though, because you know I didn't read the expanded universe stuff. I never really got into all of the other stories of the tertiary characters or anything like that. So. I, for one, am really looking forward to this. And I like the cast, too. It's got a ton of good people in it. I mean, it's got Mads Mikkelsen. Mads Mikkelsen is awesome.
Yeah. I've got like five things I need to talk about because I did read a lot of the Expanded Universe. I do have a lot of the X-Wing Rogue Squadron comic books, which were pretty darn good. But I also wanted to bring back, I want to do a throwback to, was it Dave that brought up C-3PO and the Red Arm? About the backstory on that?
Mm-hmm. You have some insider info?
Steve's chagrin.
Yeah, there, somewhere out there, it's some sort of the canon expanded, new expanded universe canon material that's out there, a book, something, talks about a little bit about 3PO and why he has that arm, but I think that might be something just for talking about, like, anything Force Awakens, maybe in a future podcast.
Oh, that was, it was, his call sign letter name was something with an X, and he was a former battle droid, and he basically looked like 3PO, but he was designed for battle instead of translation.
Yeah, I think you're talking about it's an older that's an older actual expanded universe comic. What was his name? I know who you're talking about. I'm gonna lose it now. I'm gonna have to look that one up. No, but I'm talking about recent stuff that's put out specifically for The Force Awakens. They actually have some history and backstory for why 3PO had the red arm, and from what I remember, it was pretty lame. But we can talk about it on another podcast.
So that's interesting. So that was not an invention of The Force Awakens. That was in the expanded universe.
The new expanded universe. The stuff that's actually being put out now by Disney to give some reference to the movie.
I see.
Got it. And from what I remember, honestly, it was pretty lame. I'm like, it was not necessary. They didn't need to have the red arm in there at all. I don't know. So, but I'll back on Rogue One also. The other thing I'd been seeing, I haven't confirmed it yet, is there's been a lot of talk about casting of Vader. Have you guys heard anything about this or read anything online about this?
I actually did see something about that he might make an appearance.
In Rogue One. Mm-hmm.
I recall a certain Wretched Hive podcast, I think it's called, where they talked about this 2 weeks ago, I think.
Those guys have really short memories, man. They're old.
They suck,
too.
That
internet echo chamber is no joke.
It echoed all the way back to our own show.
Nice call.
Yeah, we did. I brought it up 2 weeks ago, in mentioning that the rumor is that they had hired a guy to go back and do recreations of the original New Hope Vader armor, basically.
Right. Okay.
And trying to recreate it's all nothing's confirmed. There's been a rumor of another very key bad guy from early in the trilogy making an appearance, and a new bad guy who I had not heard anything of before. But I'm going to keep it spoiler free this week.
Well, I have a question that occurred to me about Rogue One, and this is a speculative question, but I'm just kind of curious if people are as fascinated by it as I have been now over the last 5 minutes thinking about it. How are you going to open the movie? Do you open it the way you do all of the trilogy movies to now, with just the long time ago and Galaxy Far, Far Away, Star Wars, you know, episode whatever, and a crawl? Or do you try to do something different because this is an anthology film? It's not one of the core films. Do you keep that kind of brand established opening, or do you try to go a different direction?
In my many, many years of not making movies and not having anything to do with the Hollywood system, I would say hells to the yeah, you make it exactly the same. You make it you do just what Disney did with Force Awakens. No studio bumper at the beginning or anything like that. You go Lucasfilm a long time ago, boom. Cut to the main title, and you don't have to call it episode whatever. You can just call it, you know, anthology Rogue One or whatever you want to call it there, and have some type of crawl behind it. But yeah, why wouldn't you? I mean, it's tried and true, and it's, you know, it's going to make all the nerds happy. It'll make me happy doing.
Well, if they're going out of the way to put Star Wars Rogue One, a Star Wars story, I would assume they're going to go full on Star Wars intro everything. So they're going to have that scroll. They're going to have that. They want to keep it as uniform as possible and know that you're experiencing a Star Wars film. So I don't think they're going to change that up. Now, I would be really surprised if they did.
I'm going to take the contrary position here because I do not think we're going to see a scroll with this movie. I think they want this movie to be set apart. It's not one of the episodic adventures. It's clearly something different. The look and feel of this movie, by all accounts, is quite different. We're looking at more of a sort of a realistic war movie, a band of brothers type of an action.
Yeah, they've come out and said there will be no force users in this movie, though. You won't see anybody using the force in this movie.
It wouldn't surprise me at all if it had a completely different beginning, no scroll. Maybe we get the music. I don't think John Williams is scoring this movie. I think it's going to be another composer. And so it wouldn't surprise me at all if it was completely different.
Are we going to talk about that giant spoiler alert right there? No force users? That means there's no Vader like we talked about last week?
Oh, wow. That does kind of put a kink in my theory there that there's somebody making a Vader costume, doesn't it? God damn you, internet.
Well,
Shows I have no idea what I'm talking about.
But there will be a Rogue One trailer at the Super Bowl. See, I'm going to back...
Except for that,
yeah. I'm going to go ahead and back up Mr. Baldwin here with the... there is not going to be the Star Wars crawl in the beginning, because I feel like if there would have been, they would have called it Star Wars Rogue One. It would have been that same kind of episodic feel, but instead they're calling it Rogue One, a Star Wars story. Mm-hmm. It's like, I think just based on the title, it's got a different feel than any of the other Star Wars, Return of the Jedi, Star Wars, A New Hope. This is Rogue One. It's not a Star Wars movie. It's a movie set in the Star Wars universe that I don't think they're going to tie in the same way that they do the rest of the episodes.
Okay, so once again, it comes down to the decider, Scott Ivansky. which side of this argument do you fall on? We are... Dave Pottersley is the only one who has an answer to these questions.
Dave.
Scott's on my side, and it's Nico and Steve right now. Yep. Dave, the decider, what do you think?
Honestly, I'm with Mr. Baldwin and Nico, and Nico took the words right out of my brain. I think if they were going to do it with the traditional expected opening, they would have called it Star Wars Rogue One, but they're going a different direction, so I think they're going to go whole hog the different direction. Different opening, different scoring. We've even got a different title sequence for the movie.
All right, mark this date.
Okay.
February 2, 5, what is today?
2/2/16.
We are recording on the 2nd to air on the 5th, yes.
Ah, okay. Yes. Mark on 2/2. This is the day that Scott and I were right.
Nice call.
And there were no days before that when Greg and Scott were right.
Damn it!
There's a first time for everything, boys.
Wasted.
Well, along the lines of a live-action Star Wars war type of a movie, I want to move on a little bit to an article that I shared with you guys on the show notes. This has been something I'm very intrigued by for many years, the idea of a Star Wars live-action television series. There's long been rumors of scripts that were crafted, about 50 scripts written by some really great Hollywood writers and television writers. And apparently... this article, which was published by TVLine.com, by the way, claims that ABC is saying this will never happen. From the article, the hour-long drama was said to be set between the original film trilogy and its prequels and would focus on two families' battle for control for the universe's seamy side. The project got so far along that 50 scripts were reportedly written by scribes such as, and Scott, you'll like this, Battlestar Galactica's Ron Moore.
Nice.
Apparently they were great too. Lucasfilm producer Rick McCallum was so impressed that according to slashfilm.com, he likened the proposed show to The Godfather and Deadwood in space.
Oh, man.
Can you imagine?
Touching on touchy subjects with me here.
Can
you
imagine?
Rick McCallum and things fall apart for me, so.
Really? Well, can you imagine a Star Wars weekly hour-long show that looks something like Deadwood or The Godfather?
Yeah, I had heard lots of rumors over the past 5-7 years about a live-action television show, one that centered basically around bounty hunters, and also heard about a comedy show that I believe Seth Green was working on as well. I don't know if it was a live-action one, but
Let's come back to that when you're done with your thought. I have some words on that when you're done with your thought.
Yeah, but McCallum talks a lot, and I have a lot of issues with how he handled a lot of the production side of, obviously, the prequels. I know he's out there trying to push how great everything is, so I take what he says with a grain of salt. Godfather level, I don't know, but I would love to see something like that, no doubt about it. Something gritty, dark, grimy, Star Wars related. I think that would be excellent, but it's McCallum, so I have to just let it go. Go ahead, Greg. I know you were.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more about McCallum. If I could paint one person as the villain other than George Lucas of the prequel trilogies, it would be Rick McCallum.
Absolutely. I agree wholeheartedly with you on that.
So you mentioned the Seth Green project. So George obviously was a big fan of Robot Chicken. He was on a couple of the Robot Chicken specials, and actually hired both of the creators, Seth Green and Matt Seinreich, or whatever his name is. I'm sure I'm butchering it just like I did Plagueis or Plagueis or whatever the hell his name is that I can never pronounce. But they contracted to do a show called Star Wars Detours that was going to be – it was going to be a canon show. It was going to take place in the Star Wars universe, you know, and had – was going to have all kinds of guest stars just like Robot Chicken had. And here's the thing. They actually finished about 40 episodes of that show. They're done sitting somewhere in a vault waiting for us to watch them.
So we'll never see them.
Probably not.
Well, the interesting part of that was I remember when they made that decision, because those were produced right before Disney bought the franchise.
Yes.
And the conjecture
was one of the thing in the great culling after Disney bought, you know.
Yes. Yep. So I don't know if it was conjecture or if it was Disney that actually said it, but I remember them saying that they didn't want to oversaturate the fans with another Star Wars property leading into these the new three movies they were make. And then what did we get this last year? You can't walk into, you know, any store in the city where I live and not see Star Wars. I was in the grocery store, I think I mentioned maybe a couple of weeks ago, and in the milk section, and turned around and there's a rack of t-shirts, you know, there. So you just can't get away from it. So I just thought, it was looking back, it is a little bit funny that they didn't want to oversaturate the market. Well, that's exactly what they did for The Force Awakens.
Oh, absolutely. I was getting my car worked on. They wanted to sell me a set of dark side radials. I mean, come on. It was just ridiculous. But the thing about that show that we were just talking about, but Greg said it was called Detours.
Yeah, Star Wars Detours, yeah.
One of the basis from what I had heard originally or read on one of the fan sites was a great comic book short miniseries. It might have only been like 2 or 4 issues, called Tag and Bink Are Dead. And it's a Star Wars comic, It's about these two guys that are stormtroopers. It was almost written like with Kevin Smith in mind from the Clerks days. You know, stormtroopers not knowing how to install a plumbing main, which runs the joke all the way up to Force Awakens. But the idea was these two kind of goofball stormtroopers that don't quite fit in. And it was just a great story. And from what I had heard, it really kind of piqued Seth Green's interest in telling that kind of a funny story. And that's where the idea kind of came from. Just the basic idea, and then it just went from there. And if there were 40 episodes that were shot and are just sitting in the can somewhere in a vault, man, that just bugs me. Mm-hmm. That needs to be seen. That stuff needs to be seen.
How can they just put it out there? I mean, just put it out there.
Yeah.
People would love to see it.
Well, the trailers for Star Wars Detours were pretty funny. Do you guys remember those? Mm-hmm. They used to be available for a little while.
Yeah, I didn't even know they were out.
Yeah, I mean, this is 3 years ago now, or whenever it was when they announced. When did Disney buy? Was it 2012? Or 2013?
Jeez, man.
No,
we should know this.
Lifetime ago.
Yeah, well, you know, before the purchase, those trailers for Detours were available. There's about 6 or 8 of them, and they were really funny. They were maybe 30, 45-second trailers, and good stuff. I really remember looking forward to seeing the show, and then it was, you know, disappointing to know that they were going to be locked up for a while. But I think we'll get them eventually, don't you guys think? I mean, they're not going to sit there with high quality Disney programming, you know, considering the
like Song of the South.
Well, look, we can find Caravan of Courage now. So, you know, they've got to put out Detours. Oh. Come on.
In case you guys were wondering, I know it's all audio, but I'm going to put this up on the screen if you can see it.
So what I see is Star Wars Tag and Bink are dead. Logo or album cover or comic book cover. That's what
comic book cover. That's the first issue. And I believe it was written by Kevin Rubio, who was the gentleman who made Troops. Is that correct?
He's the guy running for president right now.
Oh, dear God.
That's Paul Rubens.
Oh, damn it.
All right, let's move on, guys. Dave.
Can I move back to one thing?
Absolutely.
What originally started that wonderful meander, those scripts that were done for the drama series.
Yes.
A rumor that I have read about, because the Wretched Hive is the place for completely unsubstantiated rumors, is that those scripts are going to be the basis for that Star Wars Underworld concept is what's going to be the basis for that unannounced third anthology film.
Ooh.
Because we know we have Rogue One. We know the next one is the young Han Solo. That third movie that they've put on the slate, they haven't announced title, plot. They haven't attached any writers or directors to it as far as I know. We just know Star Wars movie anthology series. The rumor I hear is it's going to be culled from all those scripts, which would be fantastic. Anything with Ron Moore on it that's sci-fi, I mean, go see it. Book it. It's great.
Oh, interesting.
Excellent.
Well, hopefully they'll be put to good use, because some of the names I saw attached to those scripts were really really high level folks that with great, great pedigree. So hopefully we'll get to see those eventually.
Folks.
All right. So we do have a couple of other Star Wars TV stories. Disney announced plans for Star Wars Land to be debuted on television on February 21st. And these shows are to feature none other than Han Solo himself, Harrison Ford.
The guy who wanted nothing to do with Star Wars is just going out with a frickin' bang. He's like, give me all the Star Wars. I want all of the Star Wars.
They paid me.
It's true.
It's all true. All 25 million.
I can imagine an awful lot.
I know what I'm doing. All right. And one last story for Disney and Star Wars. Disney is looking apparently to cash in on having these movies air on television. In fact, Scott, this is a story that you shared or you pointed out to us.
Yes.
Disney seeking a rich deal for the TV rights to the Star Wars movies. $90 million just for the rights to air episode 7, 8, and 9. And that's being reported by Variety.com. $30 million each for episode 7, 8, and 9 just for the rights to broadcast those movies.
Seems reasonable.
I don't think it's that bad a deal.
It's really not.
It's really not. Yeah. It's really, yeah, it's probably what it's worth. So,
and correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't it the deal before Disney bought them? Spike TV bought the original trilogy, the sole property airing for 7 years for $100 million. Is that correct? This is early 2000s.
Dave, you are a human Wikipedia. What do you have to say?
Wikipedia.
Error 404, file not found.
Well played. Well played. I'm looking at the article on Variety, and I seem to remember reading something about that, Scott. I'm not seeing anything jump out at me here. Oh, here we go. Okay. The six older Star Wars movies will likely become available much earlier to free TV buyers through the package now that's on the auction block. These movies were most recently licensed by Viacom Spike TV in a six-year deal valued at $65 to $70 million.
Okay.
The titles have been out of circulation on commercial TV since the Spike TV license expired in 2014.
That's $10 million a movie, and they've tripled it. And you're getting half the movies. Right? Did I do that math right?
Yeah, but these three movies are all going to be good.
I had a little technical difficulty.
Well, Dave, it's funny that you say that, because the next story up on our queue here, well, it's really not a story, but it's a conversation we've been having, a little bit sidebar, on and off for, I don't know, I'm going to say on and off for a year or two. We've been sort of having this conversation.
Out loud, at least.
About Return of the Jedi. And I'm going to let Greg take over in a moment, but
I think we lost Greg. What
did we lose, Greg?
I think Greg is herding pugs in the background. Oh. I was hearing yips and yaps from a small furry animal.
There he
scruffy
is,
scruffy looking nerf herder.
I'm back. Yeah, I had to go kill a dog. I'm sorry.
Put him under. I think that was Tallulah.
That was Tallulah. Yeah, Tallulah. Did you hear her barking? Background?
Yeah, did you turn on the laser engraver or what?
I need to.
Greg was the one that came to the dog's defense last episode.
Greg, were you putting a bantha skull on Tallulah?
A Mandalorian, one of those Mandalorian little cow skull things is what I was doing.
I have found some info on the broadcast rights to the first six movies.
Oh, okay. Share.
If you guys are interested.
Yes.
Well, first of all, Spike TV paid $65 million for the exclusive broadcast rights for all six movies for 6 years, starting in 2008. Oh. So that expired in 2014. But here's the interesting disclosure to me. Fox, not Disney, still owns the right to broadcast those six Star Wars movies. Disney only has the rights to digital distribution. The five most recent movies will revert to Disney in 2020,
but Fox holds on to the broadcast rights for A New Hope in perpetuity.
Wow. Forever. Yeah, I thought that was a genius move on their part, actually, for them to, you know, they sold, they basically sold everything to Disney except for the broadcast rights to episode 4. I'm like, that's genius. Not the broadcast, and maybe it's the broadcast, maybe not, but the basically DVDs, the digital distribution, you know, DVD sales, they keep that forever. I'm like, that's smart.
So, as an interesting bit of comparison, before the Spike TV deal, Fox's TV network had the rights, and they had paid $80 million for a 10-year exclusive license for The Phantom Menace. Alone.
Wow. Somebody got screwed.
Well, look at how well Spike is doing after all that Star Wars viewership they got on. Look how well they're doing now.
Oh, my God.
And all the executives got Ford Pintos for Christmas that year.
And promotions, probably.
And promotions.
They're all high-fiving. Woo! Star Wars, woo!
All right, so I started to introduce the next section. I think, Greg, you had actually stepped away. But you are going to play a key role in this conversation, my friend, because we were talking about really the idea of this conversation we've been having for several years about Return of the Jedi.
Oh, God, and here it comes.
Posing the question, does Return of the Jedi suck? And we've had some pretty spirited conversations about this, and I will start by saying I love this movie, okay? It's one of my favorite movies. I'm an original trilogy guy. Star Wars and Empire, two of the greatest movies ever made, no doubt. Return of the Jedi I have a soft place in my heart for this movie. However, Scott sent me this great article, shared this great article earlier this week with all of us, 50 Reasons Why Jedi Sucks by Dan Weber and Dana Gould. And I got such a kick out of reading this article. It really, really does a nice job of outlining and defending their position that indeed Jedi does suck. And I got such a kick out of reading it. I did a little internet search. I was just hunting for Dan Weber and Dana Gould. I would love to have either one of them on this show. I think it would be so entertaining. I don't know if the Dana Gould is the same stand-up comedian that is a fairly successful comic, but possibly.
I like to think so, because that guy's hilarious. If you've never seen any of his stand-up, he's got a couple of specials on Netflix, and he's really funny. He's kind of an old-school comedian. He got, you know, he found his he first got popularity in probably like, you know, that late 80s, mid-90s when all the stuff on like Comedy Central, you know, all the stand-up shows. That's when I really first started seeing Dan Gould. So I hope to God it's the same guy, because he's hilarious.
It would be great if it was. And I actually liked his Facebook page and sent him a message. Just said, hey, I just read an article called 50 Reasons Why Jedi Sucks. Was this you that wrote this in the 90s? Didn't hear back. I also found a guy named Dan Weber, that's V-E-B-B-E-R, who is a, I believe he's some sort of a cartoonist in Los Angeles. And I also sent him a message. I have no idea if these are the right guys, but I just took a stab in the dark with these two. But I wanted us to talk about this article because if you haven't had a chance to read it, guys, you really need to review this. It's not only hilarious and entertaining, in my humble opinion, a lot of it is dead on true. But I wanted to bounce this to Greg, because I know, Greg, you have some strong opinions about one of my favorite movies of all time, Return of the Jedi.
It hurts me to say it's one of your favorite movies. For me, when this movie came out, 83, I was 13 years old, and I was probably over my Star Wars toy collection toy collecting, and it wasn't really collecting. It was just you know, my playing with Star Wars toys. I was over that. I was, you know, discovering girls, and that was what I was into then. However, I still really like Star Wars. I was still super excited for this movie to come out. You know, all the trailers come out, all the stuff on Endor with the trees and the speeder bike scenes, everything like that, all look great. Wanted to find out what happened to Han Solo, you know, because it ended on such the great cliffhanger in Empire. There, the final confrontation between Luke and Vader and the Emperor and everything is going to happen. And oh my God, they turned in. If it wasn't for Hayden Christensen and his hatred of sand, this would be the absolute worst out of all of the Star Wars movies, on par with the holiday special.
So you,
on par with the holiday special.
You rank this as the second worst Star Wars movie? Is that what I'm hearing you?
Yes, this is 6 of 7 is what this is. This is 6 of 7 when it comes from best to worst Star Wars movies.
That sounds like a Borg character.
That wasn't that 7 of 9? That was 7 of 9.
Yes. Oh, you're fantastic.
7 of 9 was just smoking hot, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, we digress.
I'll tell you why. It's not the Ewoks. Ewoks, there to sell toys. I totally get it. But and it touches on it a lot. It takes takes the best character, the biggest complaint for me. I'm gonna bury the lead. I'm just gonna go right to number one.
It takes the best character
in the trilogy, Han Solo, and just makes him an also ran in the movie. He does nothing in this movie. He gets rescued at the beginning, and he's just like, thanks for coming to get me. I'm gonna go over here and just I'm gonna turn off the force shield, and then I'm gonna get pissed at Leia because she's got the hots for her brother, and that's gonna make me moderately upset. I don't know. I guess it's fine, but you know, I'll walk away if it has to be that way. But
I gotta jump in on this, Greg. I'm sorry. First of all, I don't know what you were going for. I got the redneck part, but you started to veer off there. Honestly, that moment was the killing moment for me with the Han Solo character. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say, I don't think Jedi sucks. I think Jedi has a lot of problems. A lot. And this article clearly points those out. Stuff that I was kind of struggling with trying to find out personally myself, like what was going on with this film. But man, that's Han Solo in this movie just made me so sad as a person. I mean, who, after seeing what he did in A New Hope, this character, this great character, and then going from A New Hope to Empire, and then jumping right into the whole thing with, you brought up Leia and him up in the Ewok village, having this seriously 6th grade conversation about jealousy. I'm like, where did this come from?
You know, guys, let's hold it right there for a second. I've got a clip queued up.
No,
I have a clip. So we've got the Death Star Death Star 2 has just been destroyed. Let me set this up for you. Han is looks like he's bandaging up Leia's arm. And they just look over their shoulder, and the Death Star has been destroyed. So here we're going to play this clip.
I'm sure Luke wasn't on that planet, too.
He wasn't. I can feel it.
You love him. Don't you?
Yes.
All right. I understand. Fine. When he comes back, I won't get in the way.
Oh, it's not like that at all. He's my brother.
He's my brother, you moron.
F you, Return
then
of the
why
Jedi.
Why did you kiss him twice?
F you. I wish, as a contrast to that clip, I wish you could play the scene in the beginning of Empire. I'm not even going to go A New Hope, because as badass as he is in A New Hope, you watch this motherfucker take names. Excuse my language. Watch this motherfucker take names at the beginning of Empire when they tell him Luke is out there missing. He goes to the guy. He's like, deck officer, where is Skywalker? You don't know where he is? Why don't you go find out? And he is just like barking orders like a champ in that movie. You're like, holy shit, I got to do what this guy says right now.
Even the part when he's leaving, I'm going to pull more on that, man. He's taking off on his tauntaun. And he's like, you're not going to make it past the first marker. I'll see you in hell. Where is that guy?
See you in hell. Yeah, where the hell's that guy?
Even his little smug smuggler sense in A New Hope, when he's talking to Luke after getting Leia and they're sitting on the Falcon, and he's like, still, you know, a guy like me, a girl like that, he's kind of got this cocky attitude. It's gone. He is just a wasteoid in this film. Yeah. It bugs to no end.
Well, timeline, as far as the timeline goes, at least we know now why Kylo Ren is Kylo Ren.
Yeah,
he's a bastard.
He's got a lot of the whiny Han. Well, no, I think because you listen to his to when he's interrogating Rey, and they go through that whole scene, and he goes, you're imagining Han Solo, you're wondering what it's like to be his father, and he goes, trust me, it would be a disappointment, you know? Or he says something to that effect. I'm like, that's a great insight, you know, as a guy who's this, you know, kind of smart assy dude who knows something, you know.
Yeah.
So I got Han Solo out of Kylo Ren. I did. Are you pulling that clip, Steve? I heard you messing with it there.
Here's one from Empire Strikes Back. Okay, that wasn't much.
You got to go about five minutes before that, maybe less than that, where C-3PO first comes up to him and tells him that Luke is missing, and he starts barking orders at the deck officer out there, and the poor guy is just shitting his pants. He's like, oh my god, this guy's yelling at me.
Isn't that John Ratzenberger?
Yeah, it's possible he came in through the south entrance, Captain Solo. It's possible. It's possible. Why don't you go find out?
So good.
All right, so they cut Han's balls off in Jedi. But
yes, they did.
And to you, that makes this...
Leia just never unfroze them.
they were hanging around Jabba's neck. That's what Princess Leia used to choke out Jabba the Hutt on the sail barge was Han Solo's ball sack.
I guess we're just throwing nice right out the window on this podcast, right?
And if that had actually been in the movie, Greg, you would have liked it better, is my guess.
That would have been an interesting scene.
Well, first of all, you open the movie on C-3PO. Never open a movie on C-3PO. Oh. Just don't do it.
No, there's a wait. I'm gonna go back that up just a bit, Greg. It goes even farther. If you look in this article, I believe there's a section on there. One of the numbered points is the opening scrawl. Mm-hmm. It talks about each one of them is the first movie is what is it? Come on, we got to know all these. It's a period of civil war.
Yeah.
Right. Second movie is, oh my goodness, I'm losing it. Help my friends.
I don't know.
Are you talking about the crawl for Empire?
Is that yes.
But
wait. You go into the Jedi one, and the next thing it is, it's like a buddy film. They mentioned it in the article. It talks about them like the crawl starts out, and it's like, we're on a quest to find Luke. It's just like, what?
Right.
But that's to be fair, that's how The Force Awakens opens. Yeah. Luke Skywalker has vanished.
Mm-hmm. I like the way they put it, though. Luke disappeared. There's a problem here. The other one's like, hey, we got the band together. We're going to go find Luke. Yay!
Yeah, it's there's so much, you know, there's too much that's played for comedy. There's too much The script is just, you know, well, none of the scripts are really good. I mean, to be fair, none of the scripts are really good. You know, I'm just going to go to Tashi Station, pick up some power converters. You know, nothing's really good. But everything just seems so stiff in this movie. Everybody is just like, you know, hey, you know, we know this is the last one. We're not going to be here ever again, you know, and they're just making a shit ton of money. They just want to make more toys. Just a lot of the acting scenes don't work. The action scenes, I think, work. The fight on the sail barge, Boba Fett dying like a punk aside, is pretty great. The set is great. The action, you know, the way they choreographed that fight, you know, is great. You know, with Luke swinging from the small barge to the big barge, the tension building that up with the music, fantastic.
Yeah, the gangway plank walk or whatever, where he's going to be dropped in the pit. That build up, that tension is great.
Yeah, with the John Williams score behind it, where it's all bump, 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 and then R2 popping up there. Yeah, it's just fantastic.
Eventually, I want to circle back to Mark Hamill's performance in A New Hope, because I will. It might be retconning, but I'd like to take you on with that one. But I want to go back to this article. Because we were talking about Han Solo, and I found the paragraph, and it's worth a quick read. It's so funny. In Empire, 3PO states that the carbonite would keep Solo safe, provided he survived the freezing process. Safe, yes, but 3PO said nothing about the side effects, namely that people in carbonite gain 20 pounds and take on the demeanor of Ward Cleaver on Quaaludes. Wars and Empire established Solo as a braggart, pirate, and all-around scoundrel. And Jedi, he's just a good-hearted, slack-jawed simp whose comments and actions are almost exclusively played for laughs. It's not in a single scene does Solo have the same acerbic edge he possessed in the previous films. And it's so true. My favorite line in Jedi is with Han Solo is, no. Actually, it's a Princess Leia line. She says, "Hold me." You know, and it just sort of goes to show there, you know, there's just a complete lack of sexual tension between the two of them, although yeah. They're supposed to be completely hot for each other. Apparently they were doing a lot of stuff on the side during the making of those movies, but on screen,
cocaine is a hell of a drug.
To me, it just does not translate at all on the film.
Well, it translated in Empire. The tension on the Falcon in that scene when 3PO interrupts them is beautiful. I mean, it's done. So he is a scoundrel. He is this kind of guy who's almost slightly kind of being a little bit dominant, kind of putting himself out in front right there for her. In return, where did that go? He's a goof.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Dave.
I was going to say, writing-wise on the character, I have to say there's nowhere to go but down from the "I love you, I know" moment
right
at the end of Empire. I mean, that is just, and it was an improv on the set, one of I think a half a dozen that Kershner let the guys do. But it's such a perfect encapsulation of that rogue scoundrel cockiness. There was nowhere to go but down, and I'm not saying that to excuse anything in Jedi. Just that was such a fantastic moment, yeah. And everything's going to pale by comparison after that. And I think the only good line Solo had in Jedi was right when they get found by the Ewoks and they think 3PO is the god, and with no patience whatsoever but a smile on his face, he says, "Well, why don't you use your divine influence and get us out of here?"
Right.
There is a moment there where it almost feels like the old Solo. And there is another moment, too, when he's kind of barking orders when they're inside the little shield generator building, where he's just kind of like telling people to move and plant some devices. But other than that, yeah, I don't know, he's just a weak character in that movie.
No, I agree. He definitely, I think Steve said it last time, you know, Solo was pussy-whipped in that movie.
That scene in the bunker, though, that's probably my favorite. It's one of my favorite lines in the entire series, though. It's just that when when they the Empire springs the trap and they all come in and they all, you know, capture the raiding party that's in the bunker, and the one guy just walks up because I just love it. You rebel scum. It's so melodramatic and over the top. I laugh every time I hear it. You rebel scum.
Overall, though, Jedi is clearly, without question, the weakest of the original trilogy. But yeah. I have to say, after seeing Revenge of the Sith, I actually enjoy Jedi more. Mm-hmm. And I actually think it's a stronger movie now that we have, by design or by accident, this kind of earlier story of Anakin Skywalker's fall to Darth Vader that we see get replayed with a different outcome in Return of the Jedi. I actually thought Sith made Jedi a stronger movie with that storytelling element.
Well, it brings some a feeling of closure to the entire trilogy. It makes you, you know, it makes you feel good for the happy ending, sure, but it seems like they cut too much out of the heart of those characters in getting there. It was all flash, and I didn't get enough substance out of that I got out of the other two. And maybe that is the characters were bored. I don't know. I mean, it's tough to say. But yeah, it's horrible. It's evil. It's awful. And I've seen it 15,000 times. So.
So you're qualified to say it's horrible.
Exactly. Yes. Thank you.
And you'll still watch it. I'll guarantee it.
Yeah, I'm not done with it yet.
No.
Yeah.
I want to point out something else. You mentioned.
I know all the words to Lopti Neck. How about that?
Most people probably listening to this podcast don't know what that is.
What, the four of us?
didn't that get translated to something about working out?
Yeah, it's a workout, 80s workout routine.
During the Let's Get Physical era, right? Kick out of that. That's good.
We need Lapti Neck back, and we need Yub Nub back. Not this other nonsense they threw in.
See, the Yub Nub song was so goofy and so Fraggle Rockish, but yeah. When they replaced it in the 90s with whatever that new age piece of crap that they put in there, I never thought anything could make me yearn for the Yub Nub song, but it was just like it was so confusing.
I
was like,
I know. It's weird
because at least with the Fraggle Rock song, it sounded like something the Ewoks would perform. The other one is all like strings and all this stuff. It's like, where did they get all the instruments? They're barely stringing trees up that they can smash two coconuts together, you know.
I just want to know what meds John Williams was on when he wrote that extra music for that re-release. Because, and look, I love John Williams, but seriously, at what point would you just look at Lucas and go, dude, really, don't do this, man. Don't do this. Just yub-nub it. You know, we'll add a bonus beat to it or something. You know?
That's because McCallum's in the back going, no, just go ahead, do it, George. It'll be great. It'll be great. Do it, George. It'll be great. The people want this. The people want this, George. The people want it. The people want it. I want you, George. Nope, I didn't say that. The people.
Somebody needed to get him off the speed and away from Lucas. That was the problem.
Yeah.
But you know, Scott, you made a great point about the music. If you take a look at A New Hope, if you can listen to that soundtrack, and it absolutely still holds up today. Obviously, it's just one of the greatest things ever put to film. And then with Empire, you had the Imperial March, which is played, I don't know, 20, 25 times during that movie. It's just all over Empire, and it's just fantastic.
It's brilliant.
And then you get to Jedi, and you get Lopti Neck and Yub Yub.
Yeah.
And it's like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah. I'm going to go even farther out on the line here. One of the best things about the prequels is the John Williams music. I like the score that he wrote for Episode One. It's way better than the music he wrote for Jedi. I actually love the love theme from Attack of the Clones better than the Yub Nub and the Lapdy Neck song. I mean, if that's the only original music from Jedi, and I know there's some extra stuff thrown in there for filler and all that, but man, what was going on in 82?
I echo that, Scott. The prequel trilogy music is fantastic.
It is. It really is.
And I still want you guys to listen to the Force Awakens soundtrack. If you haven't done it yet, download it, or you may ask someone like myself for a copy.
Not that I would ever do that.
But you can ask. And it's good. It's so good. Really like it.
Speaking of which, I got to say, when we were over at your house last week, and you made me that copy of The Royal Blood. I put that in the car on the way back, and Kara, who had a couple drinks, not going to lie, earlier in the evening, was like, madness. Why have I not heard of this band before? She was like legit upset that she had not heard of that band before. So we are now big converts on The Royal Blood, just so you know.
Awesome.
It's a great album.
Yeah. Heavy fantastic.
Yep. I'm going to bring this back. I don't know how much time we have, but I have to bring up a couple other things. The thing I was bringing up about the opening text crawl was the original one stated it's a period of civil war. And in Empire, it is a dark time for the rebellion. When you get to Return of the Jedi, it states Luke Skywalker has returned to his home planet of Tatooine. Yay! Like, I don't know. Even if you look at The Force Awakens, the opening line is Luke Skywalker has disappeared. He's gone. That's a little gloomy. It's like, he was the hero. He was the last Jedi. So you get to the Return of the Jedi, and it's like, I don't know. Just having that stated, it's just too happy of a film. It becomes a buddy film. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to go rescue Han, and everyone's going to be happy. Watch out for the big Sarlacc pit. It'll gobble you up.
She's a man-eater.
As a quick aside, I did not know this until I read a Star Wars book a couple of months ago, but do you know who wrote the crawl for the original Star Wars movie, A New Hope? Because it was not George Lucas.
Great trivia. I've never heard this one before.
Wow, I don't know. Was it his wife?
No.
It was actually Coppola.
That's a great guess on Coppola. And Coppola was there when it happened, but he did not write it. It was actually Brian De Palma.
Brian De Palma.
There was apparently a social gathering, and all those guys were friends back at the time. And De Palma and Coppola were down on Lucas's draft of what the crawl was going to be, and Lucas got, you know, miffed like the teenage girl that he is, and basically withdrew from the party, and Marcia convince the guys that they had to, you know, apologize and make it up to him. And Brian De Palma, to make it up to him, said, "Look, George, this is what I'm talking about. Let me edit this down for you and show you what I mean by how I think you should do this." And that's what wound up being the opening crawl.
Wow, that's awesome.
Brian De Palma made one of my favorite movies of all time, The Untouchables.
Oh, so good.
Return of the Jedi.
Mr. Ness, where is he? Oh, he's out in the car.
All right, that was a left turn. Well, guys, we have so much to talk about, and we could talk about this all night. And we actually have a couple of things that we wanted to get to, and we're coming on an hour and a half. So I'm wondering if we want to stop, kind of cut it short here, and save the rest of this content for next week, and maybe. We have something special planned.
Two weeks.
That's right. I should say bi-monthly, right? Every 2 weeks. So we'll be back third week of February. But we've got a special little battle lined up.
Dun, dun, dun.
So look forward to that. And we have some new outgoing music. Here we go. Guys, this has been a lot of fun. Episode 3 is in the books. You guys brought it. We brought down Jedi, I think. And
I'm not done with Jedi.
Well, and I want to circle back on the A New Hope dialogue, because I think it's retconning, but at the same time, I think Mark Hamill set himself up for success to see the progression of that character with the Tashi Station reference. But maybe we'll get there in a future episode.
Definitely come back to this.
Guys, thanks so much. We'll see you in a couple weeks. Listeners, thank you. Oh, email us.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Whoa. That was abrupt. I guess we need to fix that for next time. This is Steve. I just wanted to come back on briefly and say thank you so much for listening to the show. We're three episodes into the Wretched Hive podcast. The guys and I are having a great time, and we hope you've enjoyed listening as well. In fact, we would love to hear from you. Email us, wretchedhive@yahoo.com. You can also like and comment on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/wretchedhivepodcast. And maybe the easiest way to interact with us is through iTunes. You can subscribe to the show and leave a review, whether it's 5-star or 1-star. We want to hear from you. We want to get better, and we would love to hear your feedback. We're going to do the show every 2 weeks. Look for a show to drop around February 19th. And until then, have a great, great couple of weeks, and may the Force be with you.
I think it would be hilarious if somebody just tried to squat.
Hello.